Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast, all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's guest on Better Than I Found It is none other than Carly Ludwig, the associate head women's golf coach here at Baylor. Carly, who's in her sixth season at Baylor, has a very interesting background, was a really good player, but also a great young coach. I hope you enjoy. Welcome back, Better Than I Found It listeners. Thanks for joining me again today. Let's all give a big welcome to Baylor Women's Associate Head Golf Coach, Carly Ludwig. Carly, appreciate you sitting down to talk with me a little bit about college golf today.
Absolutely. It was quite the commute. I think it was about 20 steps over here.
Not bad. Just across the, she's referring to our golf office here at the Billy W. Williams Golf Facility. Women's program on one side, men's coaches on the other side, and she didn't have a long commute to get to this interview. But, you know, Carly, it's crazy to think you've been here 6 years, because literally you came to Baylor right before we built. We had the Billy built, but we didn't have the clubhouse built. Mm-hmm. And we were in a double-wide trailer for for a while. That was an interesting little deal. But you've been here six seasons. I mean, you and Jay Goble have a great thing going, I think. I feel like. I've watched pretty closely. Six seasons in, what do you think?
Six seasons in, I've had opportunities to leave, and I keep staying because there is a good thing here. I think this is a place where I felt like I could grow and I could learn, and you know, I've had the privilege of, you know, seeing both sides of things, which from your perspective, from our perspective, and you know, it's been a lot of fun, and yeah, I think it's been a great time here.
You mentioned a good point. When I was a high school golf coach, I had two or three chances to jump into college golf, but they weren't opportunities that really looked good to me. Mm-hmm. And so I finally did jump when Mike Holder called and I was going to Oklahoma State. But I know you've had opportunities, and I know there's opportunities you passed up. So that would tell me a lot about Jay Goble and what he's given you as an opportunity to do. I mean, I don't consider you an assistant coach. Your title is associate head coach, but you do a ton of things a head coach would do anyway. So all journeys, all coaching journeys have several stops. You've had some before here. You were at Central Connecticut State, and you were at San Diego State. And so you've been other places. We'll mm-hmm. talk about those. But before we get to that, I like to find out how my guests get to this spot. Now, where did it start? Where was the genesis? I know where mine was. I know mm-hmm. how I got in the game. How'd you get in the game? Because I don't think your dad was a club professional like mine.
My dad actually never played golf.
Okay.
So I came from a very different kind of perspective. My mom actually was the one that played golf. She was the one that got me into golf. You know, she was an athlete herself.
What sport did she play?
Swimming, golf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she actually got offered to like turn professional when she was like 18 or something like that, and just decided it wasn't for her. I think she ended up marrying a surfer or something like that, you know, how the story goes. But no, my mom actually was the one that got me into golf and took me to the golf course, let me drive the golf cart, you know, and had
how old were you like at that?
Oh, I was old. I mean, I was 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I always tell, I mean, former players I've got who have daughters, I always tell them, because they say, you know, when do I get my girls started? I said, it's never too early to take them to the golf course because they love riding on a golf cart. So it's like you can give their love to the game through a golf cart, if nothing else, because they love being outdoors. Is that your mom kind of started that way?
I mean, my mom, basically, you know, my sister and I have one sister. She's older than me. You know, we basically had to try every single sport. That was the deal. Have to try every single sport that's out there, and you can say no, you can say whatever, but you have to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And so golf was kind of the last one that I tried. I was more of a team sport kind of person, mm-hmm. and you know, I think the reason that it kind of stuck with me is because I wasn't good at it. It was something that I struggled at. It was something that I had to work at, and that was probably the reason that I stayed with it the longest, is because it just didn't come natural to me.
What other sports did you play that were team sports? Like, did you play softball?
Softball,
play basketball?
Soccer, basketball.
Okay,
volleyball.
You played them all.
Played
them all. Well, but I mean,
that was mom's rule.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I actually was introduced to the game early and hated it, and went and did the little basketball, you know, little league basketball, that type of thing. But I realized that I love the solitude of practice. Once mm-hmm. I got there, I was able to practice by myself. I didn't need anybody else. I actually like that.
I had a very similar notion. Like, for me, the the time spent on my own just working on something that I could control, and that it was in my, you know, it was all about me getting better for myself. It had nothing to do with anybody else. It wasn't if someone passed me the ball. It wasn't if, you know, someone hit a home run or whatever it might have been. It was always just I was, you know, kind of in the driver's seat of it, which I really liked and I really enjoyed.
But you were 12. So your mom, would she have been the biggest influence early on because she took you to the
– Yeah, 100% my mom.
So, was she able to teach you the game? Did she know it well enough to do that?
You know, I was self-taught until I was 18. I took maybe a couple lessons when I was 18. So I really just kind of watched, absorbed, and – You know, I was lucky enough to have a golf course, you know, that was about 4 or 5 minutes down the road from me. So I was able to be out there and kind of hang out and just see how things worked and operated. And I just kind of picked it up. But yeah, I never really took a lesson. I just, my mom tried here and there, but you know, it was more of her yelling at me and me yelling back, but because I was a teenager. But no, I was pretty much self-taught up until 18 and then took a couple lessons.
Does your mom still play today?
Oh, mom, yeah, she does. She lives to play golf.
Good for her. That's good. I honestly, that's one of my big regrets is I'm not living to play golf anymore. I notice you don't play a ton.
Well, there's been some injuries, so I've come back from some things from that, but yeah.
Well, anyway, so that's good. I always, you know, when I'm interviewing a male coach or an athlete or a golfer, usually it's their dad that got them in. So I think it's kind of cool that your mom was the one that got you in the game, gave you a love for it.
Oh yeah, pretty cool. My dad, I don't even know if my dad played a sport.
No sports.
He was like engineering mind. You know, he was.
I think there are some things he taught you that we're going to talk about a little later.
Oh yeah,
there's no doubt about it. Absolutely. Well, so we'll talk about your college experience in a little bit. But what I wanted to get to now is, I consider you to be a great recruiter. I've watched closely. So it's a real strength. And as you and I both know, recruiting is sort of the lifeblood of a program. If you can't recruit, you don't have the athletes you need to be great. So I'm going to ask you some recruiting questions because I'm interested. And I'll also find out how I was failing when I was a women's coach at recruiting. I didn't know what I was doing. But what was your recruiting experience like? So we'll just kind of dovetail. Yeah. You took up the game at 12, but at 18, you're playing on a college golf team, or 19. So
I actually wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I got into high school, and I kind of was a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. You know, I really didn't get decent. I would even say good. I would say decent. I didn't get that point until I was like a senior in high school. So by that time, everyone had kind of pretty much gone where they were going to go. I played and I started varsity. I actually was a starting center at my 5'9" self, even though if you read the pamphlet, I'm pretty sure that they put down I was 6 foot.
Of course. They always inflate that.
Exactly. I was a starting center, oddly enough, in Indiana, which doesn't happen too often.
Who's your state?
Exactly. And so I was kind of late to the game. I had sent out emails to a couple of schools. Pretty much my response that I got back was, yeah, you're just not where you need to be at this point.
I was going to ask you about your recruiting experience. Now you're telling me, so keep going with that.
Yeah, no, it's so I was mainly actually recruited for basketball. Mm-hmm. Golf was kind of the side. But I had decided in my mind that I wanted to play golf, or I was going to follow in my sister's footsteps and go to Indiana University. And I had gone on maybe one or two visits. I think I went down to Evansville or something like that. Just local. Mm-hmm. And just wasn't cut out. I wanted to go to a big school. I loved being, you know, cheering on my Hoosiers, and I just grew up that way. For those of you that from Indiana, it's Purdue, you know, IUPUI is ooey pooey. So that was, you know, that was kind of ingrained in me when I was growing up, was Indiana University. So I ended up reaching out to the coach at that point, and he said, yeah, sure, you can come be a walk-on if you'd like. And so I went there with the intention of being a walk-on, and then got an email from him saying he was retiring that year. And so, you know, I'm not really going to have walk-ons this year. And I said, yeah, okay, no problem. So I actually got in my opinion, I think it worked out for the best. I got a really great freshman experience, you know, going into college. I got that experience of not being an athlete. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, you know, I'd missed golf 100%. And when the new coach came in the following season, I did try out. I kind of had a little bit of a, you know, a misstep on the back nine. But again, I always truly believe, and this is something Jay and I talk about all the time, is that, you know, things just come together. Mm-hmm. They fall apart or they come together just at the kind of the right times. And for me, I didn't make the golf team at IU, but I decided, hey, you know what? I miss golf a lot, and I'm going to go figure out where I can go and go play.
Okay, so you went to college, and you were just going to be a student. Mm-hmm. Things happened, and all of a sudden, now there's an opportunity possibly. You didn't do well enough in the walk-on qualifying. You're not going to be this golfer. I see where you went to Cal State San Marcos. So you're yes. going from Indiana to California. Talk about yeah. that. And just a couple of years later, you finished sixth in the national championship. So that's kind of not a normal path to get to an All-American status. Go ahead.
No, it wasn't. But you know what? It was a great experience. I actually injured myself in a pickup basketball game, December of my sophomore year at IU. And so I had knee surgery. But I had known that I was going to take my spring break and I was going to go on some visits to go visit some schools, see where I wanted to go, because I missed golf a lot. And I actually was, I'm originally from California. Mm-hmm. I was born in California, grew up until my parents divorced. And then I went to Indiana after my parents split up. But so going back to California for me was what I wanted.
How much did you remember California? You were old enough to know.
Yeah. My dad stayed in California, my mom went to Indiana, and so I spent every single holiday, every break, everything in California.
So going to California was very normal if you were going to get into college coaching.
Yeah, my grandparents lived in Southern California, so I knew kind of what weather was going to be like, and that's what I really wanted. I said, if I'm going to make this move, I'm going to make this leap, I'm going to move away from my friends, I'm going to move away from my family, I need to go someplace where I can play year-round, and that's going to be my commitment. So I emailed all the coaches in Southern California that I felt like I could play for, or I felt like I could at least, kind of develop under. I might not have played right away, but mm-hmm. I knew that I could go out and I can go get better because I could play, year-round and get out.
There's a lesson for kids. You got to go where you know you can play. And initially you went to IU, couldn't even get through the walk-on qualifying. It wasn't for you at the time. They need to go someplace where they can get in the lineup possibly.
Yeah, and that was my goal, was, find some place I could play. And that's something I say in the recruiting process all the time, which is, do you want to be a number one, number two player, know that you're going to play? Or, is your personality someone that wants to be fighting for 5, 6, maybe 4 occasionally? That's definitely something you got to think about and consider when you're in that recruiting process. And so I just knew I wanted to go and play year-round and try and figure out if I could be good. And so I emailed some coaches. One of them came back to me, and it was Cal State San Marcos. And I went on my spring break, and I had actually just gotten released from knee surgery to make swing. So I really hadn't played, hadn't done anything. And I went there and did a little tryout for them. And Stephanie's, it was Sakura at the time, but Bukri now. Mm-hmm. She's one of my best friends now. She actually was the assistant, and she was the one that gave me the okay. She said, yep, she can play. And so I had someone believe in me like instantly, and I think that just changed my whole world. So that was it for IU, and I ended up, enrolling and going to California in the fall of that season.
Did Stephanie think about it 2 years later when you were an All-American, finished sixth in the Nationals? I mean, that's a pretty good get on her part.
Yeah, no, there was some coaching changes and that type of stuff. So Stephanie, always proud of me, always happy for me. And she's one of my best friends to this day. I'm very thankful for her. And I know how much she changed my life. And I think that's part of the bigger picture for me is mm-hmm. is how much someone believing in you can change your world.
I mean, just say a couple of words just changed it all of a sudden for you.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of where my coaching kind of style always becomes and stems from is, I did have someone believe in me when they probably shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. I always believed, there can be that change and that part that clicks. And, I want to always believe that. And so that's something that has really kind of, I think, shaped me.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a good point. The believing in a player, you've got to figure it out in recruiting. Mm. If you think that kid really has what you're looking for, if you will. So let's spin this right toward recruiting. First of all, congratulations on being an All-American with literally no background almost in it. That's pretty amazing. But so I started this by saying I think you're a really good recruiter. And it's really important in recruiting that you find things out that are going to benefit the team later, or do you find things out that wouldn't and you probably don't want that player? So when you're evaluating a prospect, what's the most important attributes you look like? What are you really looking for? Not other than a ranking, because we get the ranking part.
Yeah, I think the one thing I've always tried to look for is someone who's not there for their parents, not there for, you know, their coaches, not there for their maybe their country, but and in the end, it's something that is, lives deep down inside of them, and they'll do anything for it to get better. I think it's really hard to find these days, to be honest, which it makes me sad. Mm-hmm. But I would say that it's one of those things. I think I've lucked out a couple of times, you know, finding those kids that it just eats them up when they don't play well. You know, they want to know, you know, how can I get better? What do I need to get better? And
they want to be coached.
Correct. And they want to have a group of people. They might not listen to every single word everyone says, but they take the best parts of it and they make their own best decisions. And I think that's something that is something I look for and try to find and try to figure out. I mean, I had another coach say to me, yeah, I always look for the person that pulls out their own push cart and doesn't let their parents do it, you know? And I'm like, actually, that's a very good point. Just, you know, again, they want to be there instead of anything other than that. Intrinsically versus, you know, external factors are huge for me. So
when you're at a tournament, you're actually looking for those things. Whereas a lot of coaches, it's literally club head speed, ball speed, finish, score. I mean, I get all those things are important. When it comes right down to it, if you're going to be a great coach for this player, they need to be coachable, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What things give you pause? Like so what's one thing that give you pause? You're going, oh, I don't think so. Or is there anything? I mean, is like anything obvious?
To all the parents out there, I watch you guys just as much as I watch them.
Very good.
You know, I think that's probably one of the things that I really do have concern about is the parent side, because, you know, they got to be able to do this on their own. A lot of in women's golf, you know, we're very much an international sport. Mm-hmm. And so for us, they got to be able to survive on their own. They're coming thousands of miles away. And sometimes, you know, the culture is just absolutely just dramatically different here in the U.S. So they got to be able to survive.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, the culture is different in Texas than it is in California. You well know that. So mm-hmm. I would agree. I think parents can give you pause sometimes if it's not the right mix for what you're looking for on the team. I read a really good book a couple of years ago called The Matheny Manifesto. Mike Matheny played for the Cardinals and coached at the Cardinals. And he basically wrote a letter to these parents that wanted him, when he was going through injury rehab, they wanted him to coach their little league team. And he basically said, I'll do it. Here's the ground rules, which I'd never seen anybody do that. And it's kind of amazing. And he wrote a book and I read it and it was great. Obviously, we're not going to write a manifesto here to the parents, but it is important.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity for your child to grow up and kind of experience life. And sometimes things aren't going to feel very good. You know, that's part of it.
Absolutely.
You've traveled, as we said, a bunch abroad recruiting. So you've mm-hmm. gone all around the world. You're young. I'm not. And
I'm not that young.
Well, but you're young enough. You haven't traveled enough yet where it really has worn you down. I have to kind of psych myself up to want to travel. Which is understandable. I've done it a lot more than you have, but you've done a ton in a short amount of time. What's the most memorable recruiting trip you'll never forget? Give me a little story about something that would have been interesting. Did you get stuck in an airport for three days?
No, that was just recently. But okay. No, I probably think the most memorable, just because it changed, you know, my view on everything that I might have known, you know, internationally or about other places, it was actually Thailand. Mm. So it was kind of I'd never wanted to go to any part of Southeast Asia. I just didn't have any interest in it. Wasn't my first choice. But I got invited to go do a camp there. And, you know, I was in California at the time, and normally speaking, you would probably go California and you would go further west. Mm-hmm. However, this camp decided to send me a different direction. So I actually went to Abu Dhabi and then all the way to Bangkok.
They sent you east?
Yes. It was the longest flight. I mean, I circled the world a few times on that trip.
You did.
But I got to Thailand and it was absolutely something that I'd never seen. Mm-hmm. It was so far from what I grew up with. It was so far from anything I'd ever known. It was so far from anything I'd ever experienced. That I think it just opened my eyes to, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. Every country makes it work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to be said about, you know, just in the golf game too, which is like, you just have to make it work. doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't have to be pretty. I mean, I was looking at telephone poles in Thailand when they have, you know, thousands of wires mm-hmm. just curled up. And you're like, how in the world does anyone get internet here? And it just works. Mm-hmm. And I think that was just something that just blew my mind. And I think I've now been back to Thailand probably about 7 times now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you just love it.
I just love it. It's yeah. just a great culture. I mean, it really is really a friendly country. I've always had great experiences there. And it's always a fun time to go see, you know, this tiny country has just produced so many great female players.
It's incredible.
And so it's interesting to find and to see that.
You know, I grew up in Oklahoma. I haven't really lived very far from here, basically, but the times I have traveled, although I don't love the travel anymore, I do love the cultural experience you get. And like you said, you didn't know anything about Thailand. And now you have a great respect for the people, for the country, for their culture. And probably are going to get players through the years from there because you've got a connection. So I think it's great. Although I've recruited a large amount of Texas players, but it's great. We have a young boy from Mexico this mm-hmm. year. And our guys love him. They think he's fantastic because he's bringing a different culture to Waco.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty cool.
I think it's great, too. Just from our team aspect, I mean, you can basically say we have 9 ways of getting it done. And it doesn't matter what language you speak. You know, they are all on the same page when it comes to trying to get better and why they're here. And, you know, I think that's the coolest part is seeing that, you know, every culture can figure it out and get it done and produce great players.
I agree completely. You know, if I had my choice, the best junior golfers in the country would all be in Waco, Texas, and they'd just be right here. It'd be easy, but it's not that way. We do recruit outside our region, and you've done a great job of that. I do consider you a great recruiter, and I think we've got a lot to learn from you all. Biggest changes you've seen in the college game? How long have you actually been in the college game? Since 2008, maybe right in there?
2011 was the first year that I was hired at Central.
Okay, Central. Okay.
Yeah, I was 26 years old. I mean, I had no experience. I just actually been diagnosed as a diabetic
mm-hmm.
About 2 years prior to that, and when I was 24. And so my whole world had kind of changed in that kind of perspective.
That's kind of old to be a type 1 diabetic. Usually that happens. My wife, Pam, was 12.
Yeah.
So that was unusual.
Yeah, very, very unusual. Actually, when I went into the hospital, I was very, very, very fortunate. And I will be forever grateful to John McCook, who was, you know, my boss at a high-end private club, the Santa Luz Club in San Diego, who was a type 1 diabetic himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me one day and he said, man, you don't look good. And he actually used his own test kit to test me and mm-hmm. said, you got to go.
You got some problem.
Yeah.
Was your blood sugar low or high at the time?
It was beyond high.
Yeah, way high, like 400, 500.
Oh, I was beyond that.
You were close to going to the hospital is where you were.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I ended up in the hospital. They diagnosed me as a type 2 diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, that can't be right. I was very fortunate to have him. He told me, go see an endocrinologist, go get everything sorted. So my whole reason had kind of changed. Like, it no longer was it, you know, I want to play professional golf. It kind of was, all right, I need to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd always wanted to go into coaching and I needed a little bit more stability. And that was before, you know, insurance kind of went until you mm-hmm. were 26.
Yeah.
So I was like, I gotta get some things in order. And I was like, you know, I should probably try coaching. So that's what I did. I emailed everyone I possibly could.
Yeah, but now we're going across the country again.
Yes, yes.
Central Connecticut.
Yeah, so, I mean, I went there and I learned quite a lot when I was there.
Who'd you work for there? Oh, you were the head coach.
I was the head coach, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't even thinking. I knew
no,
you were head
good.
Coach. But how does a 26-year-old who's never had any experience all of a sudden become a head coach? This is not easy.
No, I mean, it was literally being thrown into the deep end. I remember I showed up I got the job late August, and I had to put in my 2 weeks notice and move across the country. And so I actually didn't get there until middle of September almost. Within the first 3 days, I was on a trip with them to Dartmouth's tournament. Mm. I was like, excuse me, what? What did we do here?
Did you have qualifying or did you just take the five girls that were ready? I mean,
I mean, it was kind of funny. The first practice I showed up to, I had all of them looked at me and were like, why are you here?
Who are you?
Yeah, that's like, I think I'm the coach. Yeah. I don't know. No, it was honestly one of the best experiences. And I have some of the best stories from that group of girls. That was fantastic. But it was quite an experience, and, you know, a lot of learning and a lot of looking into myself, going like, man, all right, now I understand. Mm. Now I get it.
Well, and being thrown in the deep end probably made you a better coach later, but you were drowning while it was happening, right? I mean, it was tough at first.
Unbelievably tough, because I was still close in age to him. I wasn't too far off, you know, and I just, I was doing the best that I could with what maybe information I had. I mean, I should have definitely leaned in a lot more to my sister, my sister's a therapist. So, I mean,
one at the time.
Yeah, I should have leaned into her a lot more. And to be fair, that's probably one of the things I wish I would have done more, you know, as a coach, just in general, is lean into my sister a lot more. She's a phenomenal therapist, and I respect her tremendously. And I think she's my secret weapon, to be honest, because anytime anything kind of comes up, I just kind of run it by her and go like, hey, what does this look like? You know, do I really need to say anything, or is this something that'll just work itself out? You know, I think she's kind of my checks and balances, to be honest, on how to deal with things and handle things and make sure do no harm at the end of the day.
Sounds like she would make a great coach.
You know, I tell you what, she'd be my first hire if I ever decided to go be a head coach.
Well, okay, so your entrance into the game was a little rocky, because it was like, you're here, go into the deep end and you'll learn to swim eventually. But you've seen a lot of changes, so it's been 11 years.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest changes you've seen, or what is a major change that you've seen in college coaching? Be positive or negative.
I think from the positive, the one of the biggest changes and things that we've had is just the influx of money and interest in women's college golf. You know, that's something that has been incredible to be able to put, you know, there's been some fantastic people, memberships,
NCAA championships on national television.
There's been some people that have really done an amazing job and really wanted to put us on TV, which has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think that's only elevated, you know, what we do, and kind of bring to light all these cool stories of all these girls, you know, coming from all over the world to come to the United States and play golf. And I think it's really cool. That's one of probably the most positive changes that we've had is that kind of component. So very grateful to those folks that have helped do that for us. Maybe some of the other things that have changed, honestly, is going to be, you know, there's a little less ownership in what we do now. There's a lot of what they like to call deregulating and that type of stuff, mm-hmm. which in my mind has made it kind of difficult to do what we do. I think our main goal is that transformational coaching, you know, and trying to reach players and get to them. And I think that's a little less these days, because it's become more and more transactional with NIL and with, you know, all this Alston money and all of these
transfer
other things.
Transfer portal and just name the things,
And it's almost like, you know, well, if you're not going to give a team, I'm just going to go somewhere else and get it. It hasn't really had that, like, hey, you got to stick it out, kid, you know, like, let's find a way. Let's battle through this. Let's figure this out, and we're going to be better on the other end of it. So that for me has probably been kind of the thing I don't think anyone thought about.
I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people now, if you're going to survive, you have to acquiesce and be a part of it. You have to be a part of it if you want to survive as a coach. But I don't think any of us are just thrilled that all of these changes have been made. I don't think.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a common theme, but among coaches that, you know, I've talked to, but it's definitely different. You know, again, the ownership part, I think that's part of, you know, when you go on PGA Tour or you go on the LPGA Tour, it is your golf game. You have to take care and own it and be aware of what's going around, and you're going to have tough conversations, whether it be with, you know, firing a caddy or, you know, maybe firing a swing coach or, you know, adding someone that is going to change maybe your swing or something like that. You got to have those, you know, tough and uncomfortable conversations, but we're really not having a whole lot of those anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, conflict resolution, they're not wanting to teach it anymore. To me, I mean, I think it's important for somebody to sit in front of my desk and he's not happy with me. He's just not happy with me. Okay, can he articulate that? Can we talk about it? And can we have a reasonable talk about it? Nowadays, they just are allowed to just kind of bypass that and move on to the next thing. And it's really not helping them, honestly. But that's part of the game. That's where we are now.
So. Well, that's something that you and I, you know, that's where we have to work the hardest now, is trying to find those moments to still be that kind of coach that we want to be. You know, and then that goes along with finding those kids that we think can receive that and can embrace it. So
now how important is recruiting? just to make sure you get that person who would love to be coached, who wants to be a part of that, you know.
Absolutely.
So there's less of that, but that's okay. I still think there's plenty of kids that want to be coached.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of good opportunities for us to be transformational coaches instead of transactional, but you just kind of have to dance around a little bit. Okay, so we've talked about positive and negative changes. I also want to talk about you being the commissioner of golf, period. I mean, you're in charge. Tomorrow, what's the first change you're going to make? Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
I mean, you're in charge tomorrow. I'm not. You are.
This might be a little controversial, but I would make sure that we have a system up in place for rankings and watching scoreboards and leaderboards and that type of stuff.
How timely is that?
Isn't it?
Yeah. No. We've had a little bit of a rough start to our season here. Hopefully that's going to get done.
I hope so. Yeah. I definitely hope so. I'm hopeful of that.
Yeah, we'll definitely see that. Would you take the transfer portal and get rid of it or not? Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it. I think there needs, I'm not opposed to that by any stretch of imagination, but I think there needs to be that conversation with the coach again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
I know, agree.
Let's
you
see
and
if
I agree on that completely. Yeah. All we have to do before they leave and get in that portal is just have a conversation. They can have a counselor with them, a mom and dad with them, whatever, an administrator with this, but let's just talk about it.
Absolutely.
And if I can't satisfy you to the point where you want to stay, then I'll be glad to let you go. But I think that's where they're missing on the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Well, just give us a chance to talk about it. And that would be something valuable. Okay. So you're not the commissioner. We're back to just being an associate head coach. Who's the best female golfer you've either seen in college golf or actually coached, or both?
Oh, that's a tough question. I've had many different parts of things that I've just been like, wow, that was amazing. I think one of the players that I was able to coach at San Diego State, her name is Emma, and she had this uncanny ability to just turn it on when she needed to turn it on. I mean, she just went to a completely different level, and she loved that challenge. I've never seen anyone embrace that challenge so much and just say, bring it on. I mean, I watched her set a scoring record at the Golf Week Challenge in Colorado, the first time it was broken in a lot of years. And, you know, her and I were discussing a shot on the 18th hole and, you know, it was tucked right side pin down the hill. And I told her, you know, let's just go middle of the green, because I knew the score. I knew that was right, you know, there for her. And so I was like, yeah, you know, it looks like, you know, we can just play to the fat side of the green, two putt, move on, we'll walk off. Be great, great day. We'll go celebrate. And she looked at me and she's like, sure. She grabs 4-iron and hits it right at
right
the pin.
Right
at the pin. And I mean, the funny thing is she pulled it off. So it was kind of cool. But to see that mentality and that mindset just kind of embrace every bit of like nervousness was unbelievable.
There's a really legendary story of Phil Mickelson doing that with his college coach, Steve Loy. And he was in a fairway bunker. Now, not a top, a high lip, but still a fairway bunker. And he had 260, hit a 3-wood out of this bunker over a hazard onto the green. But Loy was trying to get him to lay up. Yeah. I got this, coach. I got this.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah. And honestly, it's kind of cool when somebody does that, because they had that self-belief that was really strong. And honestly, part of the reason I wasn't a great player, I was just a good player. I didn't have enough self-belief, didn't believe I could do it. You said something earlier about the words we say to kids, too, and how important those are.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you've just got to say, go get it. You
know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Your favorite LPGA Tour player and why? Somebody you go, wow, what a player, or this person's doing it the right way, or whatever.
You know, I was always, I grew up in the Annika era, but for me, it really was Lorena.
Oh gosh, what a player.
So I something I'll never ever forget is she went out later in her career, she won the British, and she won it by never taking a practice stroke with putter.
Really?
She never won. Yeah, she just kind of changed to it, and she went to it. She's like, you know what? My first stroke's going to be my best one.
Mm-hmm.
And she went out and she won it. And so I think she wasn't afraid of change. She wasn't afraid to try something. She wasn't afraid just to go after, you know, kind of the impossible, kind of what it seemed like, you know. And do it, and then to leave at the height of her career.
I was
going to
say
did.
That just like Bobby Jones, she wasn't afraid to quit when she was on top of the game. She wanted to go have a family. I think it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think if she came out of retirement, she'd probably still be pretty good.
I think she would.
Yeah, I think she was amazing. And that year that she won all but one college golf tournament.
Incredible.
Yeah, that I don't think will ever be reproduced at any level. I mean, Rose Zhang did some amazing stuff, but it's like that was unbelievable, yeah. Honestly.
She was dominant beyond dominant.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Okay, I can see where that would be one of your favorite LPGA Tour players. She's not there playing anymore, but she's definitely one of the greatest. So at one point you were an interim men's coach.
Yeah.
So I was not an interim, but I was the head women's coach, and we've kind of documented through my podcast and in my book that there were some interesting things that happened. Give me, and you know the story about the cold sandwich on the Learjet, and I got upset at her and that type of thing. Did you have any stories similar to that when coaching men? Because you were thrust into the position in October.
Yeah, I took over in October for the guys, and it was actually right before UConn's event. Mm-hmm. And very, very similar. somehow it always revolves around food. But, you know, I show up to the tournament. I've got the guys in the van, and I'm like, okay, like, you guys go warm up. I'll see you soon.
How old were you, by the way?
I was
20s? 30s,
maybe? 29, I think. Okay, right. I was right at 29, okay. Or 30. Gosh, I'm losing track.
You were young.
Yeah. But anyway, we pull up. I'm like, hey, go warm up. Go do your thing. And so they're out warming up. And I come back, and before they tee off, I'm like, okay, like, what kind of snacks do you need? You know, do you want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And they all looked at me like I had, like, 10 heads. They're like, wait a minute, you have snacks?
Unbelievable.
And I'm like, well, yeah.
Of course.
And I'm like, do you want a peanut butter and jelly? Like, you have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And
well,
like,
see, this is the opposite of entitlement. It is the opposite. Yeah.
It was probably the most endearing moment I've ever had, because they just looked at me like...
She's the greatest coach ever.
Oh, yeah, and I was like, gosh, yes, amazing. No, that was probably one of my favorite stories. I really enjoyed coaching the men's. They have a very different approach. They've got, you know, a very different way of dealing with things. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun to see, and I think I learned a lot from, you know, how can I kind of float between the two and help on the girls' side. Things that I picked up, and then what do the girls do that I can help with the guys? And I think it was a lot of fun.
What would you ever coach men's golf again?
Oh yeah.
Oh good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I would coach women's golf again. I really would, because I learned more that year than I learned about any other year of coaching.
Yeah.
Just so many things yet that you could learn. Best piece of coaching advice you've ever gotten from another coach, an opposing coach, probably could be a coach you've worked for, but.
It wasn't a coach necessarily. It was someone that it was said at the right time. And I think the timing is huge. You know, we got to be able to receive things.
Yep.
But basically it was stop standing outside of the doors. Go through one. It doesn't matter if the one is correct or it's wrong or anything. Just go through the door because there might be something on the other side you didn't even know was there. And I think that was really
important.
Who told
you that? I like that. I'm writing it down right now.
It was actually a member at the club that I was working at.
Step through the door.
Yeah, just go through the door. Doesn't matter what's on the other side. Doesn't matter if it's the right door, the wrong door. It just doesn't matter because you just got to start moving. And I think for me, I took it as, you know, you're standing still.
Mm-hmm.
And just step through a door, go see what's on the other side. And if you don't like it, you can go through a different one. But if you're just standing here, you're never going to know. So for me, it hit me at the right time. And I'm very, very thankful for that information. And it's something I've actually told to a couple of my players before and kind of keep passing it down.
I just wrote it down. Very good. All right. So a young coach comes to me and says, what do I do to get in the coaching profession? Or a young kid that wants in coaching. And I said, well, you know, I tell them this, I tell them that, work a golf camp, do all these things. But the most important advice I give them is make sure in any interview when you're talking to another coach that they understand you would crawl across 5 miles of burning hot coals just to get to work. Okay. I think there's a story about you yeah. like that.
I know where this is going.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, and I haven't heard the full story. So I want to end the podcast by telling this story. Yeah. About how you built your own little living space in a backyard so you could live and coach at San Diego State.
I'd moved back to San Diego after Central Connecticut, and I had been working a golf camp with Evan Emmerich, who's on the men's side. He was the men's assistant at San Diego State, now at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Hey, you know, I think there's an opening you know, at San Diego State for the assistant position. And I said, okay. I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to stay in coaching or not. Like, I'm just trying to figure it out at the moment. But I went and met the head coach at San Diego State, and she ended up hiring me. But she said, yeah, there's one problem. And I said, okay, well, what's the problem? She goes, well, it pays $10,000. She goes, but it has full benefits.
Okay. And that is something for a girl with diabetes. That was huge.
And when I had been, you know, at Central Connecticut, I think something any diabetic does, we try to, you know, have a back stock of insulin and of supplies and everything. So I knew I had about 6 months before I actually had to get a job.
Exactly.
And so when she presented it that way, I said, you know, I'm still... Maybe I needed a different level of golf to keep me, you know, kind of interested and feel like I can help and that type of stuff. And I was willing to try it. But, yeah, it was $10,000 in San Diego, which anybody that lives in San Diego knows that's like $0. Came with benefits. So I was like, all right, who do I know? And, again, one of my best friends, Stephanie, who was my college coach, she basically said, well, we're staying in a two-bedroom, 900-square-foot home, but it's got a backyard. I said, all right. And they had one kid at the time, and so I moved in with them. And then she shortly after that kicked me out because she got pregnant.
Oh, no.
And so the baby needed the second room, so I was sitting there going like, oh, all right, well, what are we going to do? Because I lived with them, and it was fantastic. I loved hanging out with them and living with them. It was
You were living with them, but you're coaching.
And so I looked in the backyard, and there's a tough shed back there.
How big is that?
It was actually 11 by 12.
Okay.
It was kind of a big one. It had a skylight, had a huge open door, had a little, you know, front porch on it. It was very cute. But it was still about, I don't know, 20 yards away from the main house. And so I looked at Stephanie, and I said, what do you think about me converting this into a room? She goes, you're crazy. And I said, well, no, I want to stay living with you guys. Like, you know, the price is right. And, you know, this is, I want to stay coaching, and this is, I can't afford to do anything else. And so she's like, sure, knock yourself out. So I laid flooring. I put the walls up. I decorated it with, you know, some hanging lights and the rafters. You know, I put, I ran electrical out there.
So you had lights, you had everything you needed.
I had everything I needed out there, yeah.
Now, San Diego, pretty good climate. Did you have to put heating or air conditioning in there? You probably didn't.
No, I actually didn't. It was actually kind of nice. All I had in there was a fan. Like I said, I ran off of, you know, electrical I had run. I buried the line and everything. You know, the only problem I really kind of had is I had a friend that would meet me late night on the way over to the main house, which was a skunk.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We kind of named him Prince. He was a friend of mine for a while. He scared the living daylights out of me a few times.
He never sprayed you, though, did he?
He did not. He was kind enough not to do that, yeah. But, yeah, I had to commute, basically, from the tough shed into the house to give a shower, use the bathroom, and kind of that type of stuff. And it's funny now because Stephanie's oldest kid, Bodie, he... every morning he would turn around in his little high chair and he'd look at me coming in the back door like, where is this girl coming from? And we kind of joke with him about it now, about it. So it's pretty entertaining. But
well, when I look back on that, if I were you, I used to live in a one room efficiency apartment, and I was coaching high school golf, teaching school. I probably could have afforded something more, but I chose not to. But you literally had to decide if I want to keep coaching, because you couldn't live in another place making $10,000. It would have been impossible.
No, and I wanted it to be a full-time job. I did not want to just have to do something else on the side to you know, pay for an apartment or something like that. Like, I wanted that to be my full-time job. I wanted my time to be dedicated to that. I wanted to be available for anything that needed to be done. And that was my choice. You know, no one ever told me I had to do that. Mm-hmm. It was my choice to be there and to try to do it the best way that I knew how. And I was lucky enough to have people that that helped me.
They gave you an opportunity, but still you had to make a sacrifice, which, I mean, every time a young kid says, oh yeah, I do that, but I don't want to do that. Well, how badly do you want to coach? Mm-hmm. You know, and you had decided, I want to coach. So if I'm going to coach, this is my opportunity right now. And you, how long did you coach there?
I was there for 3 years.
2015 through 2018.
Yeah. And it's actually funny how I got hired here, because Jay had his previous assistant, Ryan, go get a head coaching job. Yep. And you know, I had sent him an email kind of late, and I said, hey, are you still looking for an assistant? He goes, yeah, who do you got in mind?
Me?
I was like, me? He goes, I never thought you'd leave California. I mean, I'm a I'm an ocean kid. I love being in the water. And so, yeah, that was a huge transition.
We've got Lake Waco.
Oh, yes. It's beautiful.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And the golf course backs up to Lake Waco.
It's gorgeous.
And new renovation is going to be amazing.
It's not exactly the Pacific Ocean.
No. But, yeah, it was a very great opportunity to come into Power 5 and to see what this side kind of looks like. And I'm very grateful to that. And I think we've been able to make some positive changes here, and very excited to where we've been, where we're going. So,
well, you and Jay have had a great run, and you still have a great team this year. So let's talk about this year's team. But before we leave that last story, every young coach listening out there, it's if you really want to coach badly enough, you'll make a sacrifice. You'll find a way if it's what you really want to do. But let's get forward to this year's team. I know you guys aren't off to the best start that you wanted, but you have a great team. There's no doubt about it. I watch them on that practice team every day. They are great players. So what do you think about this year's team?
Honestly, talent-wise, I think this is probably the best group that we've ever had. Things haven't clicked early, but that's okay. You know, it's part of the learning process, and we're going to get through it. And, you know, Jay and I, you know, always trying to figure out what can we do better and what, you know, what needs to change. We've changed some practices to see if that'll work, you know, and always just trying to see, okay, is this the long-term goal? And that's okay. We don't need to put Band-Aids on things. We just want to make sure that by the time we get to April, you know, we're in a good position to go make a run then.
I've kind of always liked that about Jay. He never panics early regardless. And one year you won the first four tournaments or something. It's different every year. But kind of when you get toward conference and regionals, the Baylor women's golf team is pretty good space. So I think you're going to be there. And I, like I said, looking out my back window here, I watch those girls practice. That's a talented group you've got.
Yeah, they're great. And they're really good just people in general as well. So that's been a really fun group.
Back to recruiting.
Yeah, hey, there you go.
Honestly, you honestly did a good job in the recruiting process of finding good people. So, Carly, thank you so much for just spending an hour with me, basically. And I love the stories. I really love the story about living in a shed. A shed you built yourself, which is kind of cool. But thank you, and best of luck to the women this year.
Thanks. Appreciate it so much.
All right, you bet.